news breaks in the tri-state area or the world.
Breaking news, breaking news. Derek Isamaki has breaking news. Once again, I want to thank Will and Rudy for sitting in the background looking good. He did a great job of that.
The consummate professional he is.
Absolutely. Derek, you do have some news.
I do have some news, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we did. We got that all queued up, and we're going now, guys. We've all been there. I don't know if you've ever broken anything in the store and actually had to buy it. I've never had that happen to me, but you always hear it before. You know, it's your problem. You break it, you buy it. Unfortunately, there's a family in Kansas that has experienced this the real tough way. When they were at a party at a local community center, the Tomahawk Ridge Community Center, that is. And Sarah Goodman and her 5-year-old son were having a dandy old time. And that little son decided to take his dandy old time next to a sculpture. And that sculpture decided to fall on top of him when he got a little too close and thus broke. Turns out that sculpture cost $132,000, which the family is now owed for.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What?
Their 5-year-old kid broke a statue.
Like, he, like, leaned on it and it fell over?
He hugged it. There's a video of him and he, like, hugged it and it fell over on top of him. And apparently the statue cost $132,000. And the insurance company for the community center said the family is liable for that.
Wow.
So, tough break.
Looks like that kid wants some hugs and not a college degree.
Yeah. Well, he's not getting a college degree anymore now.
Yes,
he's like, yo, that's going... Hey, remember that sculpture you broke? Yeah, that's why you ain't in college.
Why are we spending so much money on sculptures?
That's a bit aggressive out there.
Chico State, I'm talking to you. Go ahead.
Oh, there we go. I like the fireman. That's a hot take. Next story I got for y'all.
A wildcat's not even a real animal, but go ahead. I digress.
Want to keep going?
Our mascot's a bobcat, actually, but it's a wildcat. So,
now, if you happen to have a Tesla, transitions, y'all. Actress Mary McCormick has a warning for you. I don't know who Mary McCormick was. Apparently, she was on The West Wing. I had to look her up. I had to Google you. That's who you are, Mary McCormick. But apparently, her husband's Tesla caught fire randomly. While just sitting in traffic. He was just sitting there, not doing anything. Bam! Fire! Luckily, he got out and was able to save himself from the burning carnage. Tesla has come out and said that it was an extraordinarily unusual occurrence. So, hopefully it doesn't happen again.
Are they giving him a new car?
That is the works right now. Obviously, they're trying to still figure out what happened to cause such a wreck. To see if they do have to, in fact. Because you never know. It could have been Mary McCormick's husband for, you know, maybe he spilled his coffee down on the battery. And bam, bam, you know.
Might be why Tesla lost $401 million last year, but go ahead.
It could be that reason, too. I like that option, too. So many hot takes out here.
But, I mean, why do we have a bobcat? Are we the Chico State Bobcats now?
No, it's like, that's like this, who we modeled after, because we have a wildcat in the mountains.
Makes no
like,
sense.
Nope, makes no sense.
Okay.
Now, I don't know about you. When I break up with somebody, it's always tough a little bit. But sometimes you just kind of let it go and let it be and just let it breathe and see where it goes from there. But unfortunately for this British teen decided that when her boyfriend broke up with her, it wasn't enough. And she tried to rekindle the romance. Unfortunately, when it didn't happen, she claimed rape charges on him.
Ooh.
After they had a consensual encounter, according to the boy. Who's right? Uh-oh. Turns out, she was lying to the cops when she told them that. Because she was trying to build the relationship as strong as possible. That's a way to do it. I don't know about you guys, when I want to build a strong relationship, I just falsely accuse somebody of raping me. And it's unbreakable at that point in time.
Jesus.
But, this is problematic, but go ahead.
And that's the thing.
So this girl, who falsely accused this guy, who was detained by the police for several hours until she finally did admit to coming, saying that it didn't happen because his story did not line up the way that she said, because she said something slipped into my drink and then he took advantage of me. Well, it didn't happen that way, apparently. So she was only fined about 200 pounds, which is roughly $265 for this false accusation, which is something that kind of ate at me. Now, actual cases out there that happen are being diminished because of girls like this. When you falsely accuse somebody, you're crying Rolf out there. It's hard for women out there who are actually experiencing this, who do need to be highlighted, who do need to be protected. And you do something as stupid as that to falsely accuse that, to diminish the stories of everyone else out there, because all they're going to see is, hey, look what happens when somebody, she's probably just falsely accusing you. It's easy to point to that because there are opportunities out there. There are plethora of opportunities to point to them. So this British teen out there, I'd advise you, don't ever do that again. And to women out there, don't lie about it. And to guys out there, obviously, no means no. Respect that. Here we go. That's the news, y'all.
That was incredibly problematic, but I actually have to agree with you on the point that for every false accusation, and this isn't to go at women, but what becomes the issue then is men oftentimes will look to these one-offs, because oftentimes these crimes go unreported. We know how big of a problem sexual assault is on campuses across the country here. And oftentimes the reason women don't speak up is, one, it's oftentimes very difficult to prove. And beyond that, they are often, these women are often chastised and looked at in a certain way. And men use these cases to prop up, hey, she's probably just making it up, when that's often not the case. So it makes it really difficult. Women already have a hell of a time. I mean, just imagine all the guilt and all that, and then having to go to the police and having to follow through and having to relive this day after day, whether you're talking to a lawyer or going through the case, whatever. So, yeah, I agree with you, Derek. As problematic as that story was, I think the general sentiment I can agree with. But let's move on to funner things. Let's have your sister come save the show now. Erin Isumaki, our LA correspondent. She knows all things hockey, and she knows a little bit more, a lot bit more about golf, because I'm sure none of us watch the U.S. Open. Am I wrong?
Yeah, a little bit. I know more about golf.
Couple holes.
Not saying much. The standard's pretty low there.
Yeah, we got zero knowledge here, pretty much. I mean, golf might do putt. I mean, John might do putt from time to time, but that's about it.
So we had the U.S. Open over the weekend. I know a bit about what happened. I know that the last time. So where was it held again? What was the course it was at? Do you remember?
Shinnecock Hills in Southampton, New York.
Okay, right. So the last time they had it, they hosted a major there, I believe it was. The average score was a 74 per round, which was the highest in like something like 40 years or something. So how did this weekend go, Erin? Can you kind of give us a brief rundown of what took place?
Yeah, there were some complaints about the course, especially on the last day. It is on the water, so things can change very quickly. That, you know, the morning on Sunday, they were saying it was a beautiful course, and by the time Brooks Koepka finished, it was complaints left and right. So, you know what? It's golf. It's the weather. You can't control the weather. What are you going to do?
Right. So, who ended up winning? I have no idea, honestly. I don't even know who the winner was.
So, Brooks Koepka won, and he's actually the defending champ, so he's the first person to win it back-to-back years since 1988 and 1989 when Curtis Strange did it.
Oh, wow.
And shout out to the year 1988, because the best year ever.
Is that when you were born?
It sure was, yeah. So.
Got that one memorized, yeah.
89 wasn't a bad year either.
And we had some major names miss the cut, didn't we?
Yeah, Tiger Woods did not make it.
Thank God.
And I know, it was pretty crushing, but, you know, and he was expected to do well. People really had high hopes for him, but, he didn't even make the cut.
And correct me if I'm wrong, or I don't know if you've heard this, but I heard some news or saw something that Tiger Woods is once again complaining about back issues. Did you hear anything like that over the weekend?
You know what? He didn't make the cut, so I kind of, you know, didn't really pay attention. But, right.
You don't matter.
You know. Yeah, he just, you know, what? Like, you know, you didn't make it. Yeah, too bad, man.
Now, I heard something. I heard something happened with Phil Mickelson, where he's, like, now being disowned by the golf community.
Well, yesterday on the 13th hole, he was putting. He missed. He's running after it, and before his ball stops rolling, he puts it again.
Right.
Which is, I mean, you know, it's golf.
You can't
They're
do that?
A little no. Brass, no and some people really didn't like it.
He took his two-stroke penalty. He's fine.
But
I'm sorry, what?
I thought you could hit it if it was still moving, if you wanted to.
No, you
can't. No, I'm sorry. That's, I'm thinking of pool.
No, not even then you can do that.
You can hit it if all the, just the wipe. No, it's outside.
Okay.
Two-stroke penalty.
Okay.
He apologized afterwards. He said, you know, I didn't mean any respect, but basically by then you could tell, you know, he was done. He was over it. He didn't care anymore. You know, he was just trying to get out of there.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of like it when I see, like, pros. Like, cause I was looking at the scores. They're all, like, plus. No one finished under par in that tournament, correct?
Yep.
And that, to me, I was like, hey, that's kind of nice. Y'all suck.
Like, I'm sure you would do better, Jared.
Oh, yeah. I'd be light years. Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. No questions asked.
Even, right?
I'd have the highest plus you'd ever seen.
It's golf, not a Wills Waldo book.
Hey, Aaron, real quick, what's the next major we have in store here?
Well, next weekend is the National.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's not huge, but it's, you know, it's one. And this is all part of the FedEx Cup, so
gotcha.
They're all just trying to get points, you know, win money, and, keep it going.
Gotcha.
Speaking of money, how much did Brooks walk away with, do you know?
$2.16 million.
Wow.
That's a good weekend.
But second place did really well, too, and that was Tommy Fleetwood, and he made almost $1.3 million. So, you know, even if you don't go number one, you're still making good money.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah,
I think you could do that, Derek.
Dude, I'm right there. I'm legend in the making right here, y'all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, headed into your 30s, starting a new career in golf is probably a good investment.
I'm just saying, man, people can play it when they're in the retired years.
No doubt.
I'm pretty sure you can play
it's
forever.
It's the easiest sport to progress at.
Well, Tommy Fleetwood was only 27, so, you know.
Hey, that's my age.
There you go.
Yeah.
He's probably been playing since he was a kid, but.
He doesn't have my natural talent, though.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Well, hey, Aaron, thanks as always for joining us. We appreciate the update. None of us paid enough of attention, so we need you for these exact reasons. So thank you, as always, Aaron. We appreciate you.
No problem. My pleasure, guys.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Later, sir.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye. Later. Oh, I forgot to ask her about an embarrassing story about Derek. Ah.
We'll double up next week.
Yeah, next week.
I'm okay with that.
We'll have her on next week, and we will get another amazing story about Derek pooping his pants and reading Where's Waldo at the age of 26. Let's get to...
Yeah, it just happened last year.
Do you have an update for us, Brad?
I do.
All right, let's get to that right now. He's got stats. And his name is Brad. It's time for Statman Brad's North State Update.
How's it going, everybody? Chico Heat still in action. Went on a road trip and finishing it up this week against Lincoln Potters tomorrow, and we'll be back in town Friday. The Heat go 3-1 this weekend as... they remain up top. Lincoln Potters one game behind at 12-5, and the Medford Rogues, who they just played this weekend at 10-7, three games back. Had a great game up in Medford. I actually went up for Saturday. Beautiful stadium. If you guys ever get a chance, head on up there. They beat them on Saturday 4-3. Thrilling action. They scored four in the fourth inning, I believe, and held it there. So coming into the game, or coming into this week, the Heat are now taking on Lincoln Potters for first place. So they'll take them on for three games, and then when they come back, they'll be playing against Sorry, give me one second.
Is that Lincoln team from Lincoln, California?
Yeah, Lincoln.
Okay.
Yep. Their name is the Potters.
The Potters. Yeah, their name made for, like, they have a little pottery, like, for pipes and everything. Clay pots.
Okay.
Pipes. I don't know. I wish it's a weird mascot, to be honest.
It's a bunch of weed leaves on there.
But on.
I was thinking more like Harry Potter. That's right.
Oh, you're thinking like wizards and everything?
I would appreciate that more, I feel.
Honestly, that would be a great mascot. So... There's some really odd mascots.
Spilly honest.
And we're hoping to have a Heat coach and player on.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be talking to him in the next day or so, hopefully trying to get them on.
Great.
Insights.
So look for that next week. So they're going to be coming back the 22nd against the Gold Sox, the last place team in the league.
Marysville, right?
So it is, yep. Well, it's actually the Yuba Sutter Gold Sox now. They changed that.
Are they not in that stadium anymore?
No, the same stadium. Same in Marysville. In Marysville. It's the Yuba Sutter Gold Sox. Don't know why they changed it, but it's weird. So, but they
you
got
like Yuba Sutter more than like Marysville.
I just like Gold Sox.
Okay.
Gold Sox. Okay. Right. Gotcha.
Way better than the Potters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll have a 6-game homestand Friday through Sunday against the Gold Sox.
Is there still a pickle team?
There is, but they went to the West Coast League.
Yeah.
So Portland went up because, I mean, the West Coast League has a lot more Washington, Northern Oregon teams, so they don't have to drive 10 hours to get to Chico.
I miss the Pickles.
Me too. You and me both. You and me both. That was a great team.
Their mascot was solid.
Dylan the Pickle.
Yep. Dylan.
Dill Pickle.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Wait, did you not get that?
I was going to say, man, you took you had to spill it out for
you. I was going
to
say.
I was slow on the uptake.
Well, then.
Sorry.
All right.
He was thinking D-Y-L instead of, you know, D-I-L.
Correct.
So, anyways.
What Dylan spells their name? Oh, well, I guess there's a handful. You know what?
There's a difference.
Me no talking no mo. I'm going to turn my mic off. Go ahead.
So, last thing about the Heat. Their game's on Friday. 7:05 game time. Come say hi to me up in the booth. All right. So, you said you had a stat of the day?
Oh, yeah. Do you have one?
I want to hear yours first.
Well, I don't have mine.
All right.
Stat off.
All right. We're going to have a...
So, I'll go first.
Good old-fashioned Mexican stat off.
John and I will be the judges on this stat off right now.
And you go ahead. I'll go ahead. All right. So, today, Yadier Molina makes history. He is the career-leading, like, to lead a... Wow, I'm starting off great, guys.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to dock you on these points here.
All right, I appreciate that.
We will, but we're not.
All right, so he starts his 1,757th game for one team, the St. Louis Cardinals. That is the career leader now for a player to play or start for one team.
Wow.
His whole career.
Wow.
Yadier Molina.
Didn't, what's his name, Iron Horse Ripken have, like, more than that?
No. To start.
I don't know. These aren't my stats. Okay. Why don't you know?
All right. So what is that number again?
It's
1,757.
For Yadier Molina. I will look up Cal Ripken.
Okay.
That's a decent stat, though.
All right.
Okay, so this stat of the day comes from a week or so ago. So it's not current.
Stat of the week. Okay.
So stat of the week. And I have two of them. The Mariners were plus 17 run differential. The Astros are a plus 122 run differential. They have the exact same record.
Baseball. The way these options, you had two stats.
Well, dude, that's one stat.
But yeah, not the stat of the day.
That's one stat. That's your one stat?
Oh, that's one stat? Okay. Yo. All right. Okay.
Here's my other stat. The Cubs last week struck out 24 times against the Mets, and they won 6-1.
No. So you mean three of their outs came the other way instead of a strikeout?
What?
Well, because they play nine innings, correct?
Right.
So you have to get 27 outs.
Correct.
27 outs.
So they got 24 by strikeout.
Yeah. So
unless they didn't complete the last inning, they got all their outs.
They
by
did go to a 10th inning.
Okay, so they got...
But
okay,
regardless, the Cubs, I want to repeat that, struck out 24 times in a game and won 6-1 against the Mets.
Wow.
That one might take it for me.
I'm going to give it to that one just because that's a phenomenal feat, and you kind of started off a little bit puttery there.
Yeah,
it
was pretty rocky. But
I will say, the first one you did bring up, the amount of runs you scored doesn't matter in terms of your record on...
So wait, was that an accumulative strikeout, or was it one person?
One person.
Was it a team?
Actually...
Yeah, there's people that have done 20...
Not in one game.
Yeah.
One person has struck out 24 times in one game.
No. Like, the pitcher... has strucken out more than 20 people in a game.
You're talking about the pitcher was
Sorry.
Now we're splitting hairs. I'm actually going to go with option C that you guys weren't aware of and go with Will's stat of the day that no South American football team has won a World Cup when it's been in Europe or Asia.
Fair enough. I agree with that.
Will, yep. All right, takes it.
Will, you win.
So to go back to Cal Ripken
you get
really
two
quick,
pairs of shades.
He was consecutive games played, not consecutive games started, or just starting in general. So it was 2,632 consecutive games played for that team,
but
like in a row.
He started all of them, I thought.
Not all of them.
So he came in as a pinch hitter?
Yeah, pinch hitter, or he came in as like a defensive replacement.
I thought he's... Okay, all right, whatever.
So,
moving on. All right, so first of all, you're welcome, people. We could have done NBA trade talk and rumors for a good half hour, and we decided to give you World Cup talk instead because we are a topical show around here, and we give the people what you need. So with the last 10 minutes of the show, I'd like to spend nearly the entire time talking rumors. I love this time of the season. There's so much potential. The way the NBA looked a week ago is not the way it's going to look starting next season. I don't think even close. And this Kawhi Leonard news is a big reason why. We'll get to LeBron and all that kind of stuff, but let's start with Kawhi. So his camp is basically said that they are looking to head to LA. One problem with that, the Spurs have him under contract for a year. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, that's how you say it, Woj bombs. Mm-hmm. You know Woj. I have an alert that goes off every time he tweets. So, and he's the only person I do that for, because if he's tweeting, it's real. He reported yesterday, maybe Friday, that sources say, so this is definitely, in my opinion, coming from the Spurs, the Spurs have no interest in trading him to the Lakers, where Uncle Dennis, Kawhi's agent, is saying that they're demanding to go to. They are, however, interested in talking to Boston. So I wanted to get your guys' take on it. The Lakers or Boston, if you're the Spurs, who are you doing business with? And let's keep it brief because we don't have a ton of time. But we'll start with – John, we'll start with you.
I see why San Antonio wouldn't want to send him to L.A. being a Western Conference team. They're going to have to face him way more than they're going to have to face an Eastern Conference team. The only time you're going to have to face him is in a final, an NBA Finals, when it actually matters. You're not going to have to see they already have enough on their hands with the Warriors and the Rockets. And, I mean, we all know the Lakers are reloading this year, whether it be with, you know, Paul George or LeBron or Kawhi. There's so many big-time free agents out there that could potentially turn that franchise around in overnight. I don't even see Boston. I don't see where Kawhi kind of fits in Boston with Kyrie and Gordon coming back. I just feel like that's going to confuse that team with a nucleus that they already have kind of going, like the Warriors did. When you go into the Lakers, they're gonna get free agents. It's just going to be this conglomerate. You're going to have to, those couple years. Kevin Durant coming over was a plug-and-play kind of. I don't see that happening in Boston. You can't really plug in Kawhi and just – I feel like his personality, there's going to be, you know, time and all that. So I see the benefit for San Antonio moving him to Boston, but I feel it's in the NBA's interest to move him to L.A.
Okay, Derek?
I mean, obviously – you know, when you're talking about your lead point, the don't want to deal with your own enemy, you know?
Right.
Like, you're leaving the West, and the Spurs and Lakers, they have their rivalry from the past, and that, you know, still holds true. As long as the Lakers are competitive, they're just not right now. But they will be, hopefully, soon in the future. This Kawhi, would obviously, it'd be nice to have him on L.A., but I think Boston, they have a lot better assets, I feel, to offer
100%
San Antonio than the Lakers do, for sure. I mean, you take your pick, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, Terry Rozier. You know, they have a ton of guys that they can offer for Kawhi if they wanted to. I mean, imagine pairing him up with Kyrie. That might be a fun little pairing, that matchup. Maybe give up Gordon for him. That way you got Tatum, Jaylen Brown, something like that. That would be a fun nucleus and could actually cause some things to, give LeBron something to look at.
But you'd have Tatum, Gordon, Hayward, and Kyrie playing all the same, or not Kyrie, Kawhi playing all the same positions,
well,
correct?
You probably get rid of Gordon and Jaylen Brown, or Jason Tatum. One of those two guys.
Jaylen Brown's definitely going to be in that package.
Yeah.
The Spurs have liked Jaylen Brown since he came out of Cal a few years ago. I wanted to get your take real quick, too, Brad, if you wouldn't mind. If you're the Spurs, who are you doing business with?
Anybody in the East. Yeah, you don't want to see Kawhi three or four times, depending on where you send him. You'd rather see him once or twice, depending on where you send him in the East, and maybe once in the finals if that team makes it.
Yeah.
So I think they can probably actually get their best players out of Boston.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to get rid of Tatum, but definitely Brown might go out of there. Maybe some other bench players that had some decent minutes that you would have seen with Hayward and Kyrie out. So I think that probably benefits Boston if they're looking to send him there.
Yeah.
But maybe Philadelphia, if they're interested in trading some young guys.
Philly's in the discussion.
They really want to, like, push to give maybe LeBron James a little bit more of a leeway to come on over there. And I think Kawhi might give him that.
How great would it be if Kawhi ended up in Boston and LeBron ended up in Philly? The East is no longer the East that it's been.
No, it would actually be. You actually have two competitive teams that could possibly take out the Warriors.
Yeah, and I just if you're the Spurs, there's no way you do business with the Lakers. Mm-mm. You do not give Kawhi what he wants. The Spurs are a classy organization, obviously. They have had a sustained run of success that has been pretty...
It's unprecedented
in the NBA, especially in this modern day and age when players are moving as much as they have. If you think about it, they've had three now superstars in a row that are kind of quiet, unsung heroes, or at least we thought with Kawhi. And we thought Kawhi was the third, from David Robinson to Tim Duncan to now Kawhi. But now Kawhi wants out. It looks like his camp is pulling a lot of strings here. And I would bet my bottom dollar there is zero chance. No, I don't want to say zero chance because it's the NBA, for God's sakes. But there's almost no chance that the Spurs are going to send him to the Lakers. Why give this guy what he wants when you are not obligated to oblige this guy?
Plus, I mean, the way he left or kind of ended his stint over in this with the Spurs was just ugly.
Yeah,
he honestly could have played, and he decided not to.
I mean,
when it came down to it.
When you have Tony Parker coming out and saying, I had a much worse injury and I'm already back.
Yep.
Tony freaking Parker, who has never said anything interesting ever, comes out and says that there's obviously a lot of turmoil, and I think the Spurs, whoever it was who leaked that information to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN about them not wanting to do business with the Lakers, I think it's a big bleep you to Kawhi and saying, hey, that's what you want to do? That ain't happening. We'll ship you off, but you're not going where you want to go. You don't have a no-trade clause. We're sending you where it's best for us.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm them, I'm pushing for Jason Tatum. There's no way if I'm the Celtics. Honestly, if I'm the Celtics, he's the only guy that's untouchable on the team. I'll get rid of anyone else on the team, including Kyrie, including Gordon Hayward. I would get rid of anyone else on that team, but you can't get rid of a young, budding superstar who I believe is 20 years old.
Yep.
And dunked on LeBron James in the Eastern Conference
Finals.
And
he played really good defense against him, too. It's like he didn't give up too much against him. And so we'll see how that goes.
So, I mean, there's so many dominoes that could fall. And I just wonder, gun to your head, is Kawhi on the Spurs when the NBA draft takes place in, 2 weeks, I think? A week and a half, something like that. Brad, we'll start with you.
No, not at all. They're going to get a trade for either a pick and some players or just some players.
John?
I say yes. I say at the start of the draft he is. Between the draft happening, I say there could be some move up and trade possibilities there with picks, but I say he's still there.
Derek?
No. No okay. Spurs.
It's just difficult because the prudent thing for the Spurs to do is to get a pick now that they can control that pick. But also, the Spurs aren't the type of franchise, at least historically, that's going to panic, and they're definitely not going to let one guy hold this team hostage like LeBron has done to the Cavs on multiple occasions or to the Heat once upon a time.
I mean, but look at the Spurs, though. They're kind of a team that needs to rebuild a little bit. They don't have a whole lot going on in terms of start. Kawhi Leonard is really their only star that they got. Paul Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge are both guys that are on their way down.
Agreed. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge had a bit of a resurgence this season. He had a pretty good season, made the All-Star team, played really well.
He's a nice complimentary piece.
If he's your number one option, you ain't going nowhere. If he's your number two option even,
it's tough.
It's going to be really tough. I agree. I think the Spurs should trade him. I just think these things, though it is a business, these things do get personal. And I think the Spurs are like, you're going to hold out and sit out all year. I mean, the least you can do, and I think, you know, for what it's worth, not that Kawhi gives a damn what I think, but I did lose a little respect for him sitting out this year and holding the Spurs hostage like that. I mean, if you're healthy enough to play, you should play. You owe it to yourself, and you owe it, more importantly, to your teammates. Damn the fans, right? I mean, we always think at a certain level of importance on us. We're not that important. Yes, indirectly, the players get revenue because of the money we're willing to spend and the demand. I get that. But, I mean, you go out there for your teammates. I mean, all of us have played sports at a lower level, of course. And it just, you don't sit out. If you're healthy enough to play, you play. And who knows? Maybe he honestly didn't feel that way. But with all the stuff that's come out afterwards, it just seems like this has become a gigantic mess. And there's more going on behind the scenes than we were aware of. So I just, if you're the Spurs, I think you should trade him. But I also could see them saying, no, we're holding on to you. And if you want to sit out the season, you want to miss two seasons in a row, essentially, because he played, what, 9 games last year and collected $20 million. If I'm the Spurs, I'm saying, hey, cool, sit out again.
I like that ratio.
I want to work nine days out of the year and get $20 million.
Yep.
Yeah, I would work 365 days.
Are on their way down.
Agreed. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge had a bit of a resurgence this season. He had a pretty good season, made the All-Star team, played really well.
He's a nice complimentary piece.
If he's your number one option, you ain't going nowhere. If he's your number two option even,
it's tough.
It's going to be really tough. I agree. I think the Spurs should trade him. I just think these things, though it is a business, these things do get personal. And I think the Spurs are like, you're going to hold out and sit out all year. I mean, the least you can do, and I think, you know, for what it's worth, not that Kawhi gives a damn what I think, but I did lose a little respect for him sitting out this year and holding the Spurs hostage like that. I mean, if you're healthy enough to play, you should play. You owe it to yourself, and you owe it, more importantly, to your teammates. Damn the fans, right? I mean, we always think at a certain level of importance on us. We're not that important. Yes, indirectly, the players get revenue because of the money we're willing to spend and the demand. I get that. But, I mean, you go out there for your teammates. I mean, all of us have played sports at a lower level, of course. And it just, you don't sit out. If you're healthy enough to play, you play. And who knows? Maybe he honestly didn't feel that way. But with all the stuff that's come out afterwards, it just seems like this has become a gigantic mess. And there's more going on behind the scenes than we were aware of. So I just, if you're the Spurs, I think you should trade him. But I also could see them saying, no, we're holding on to you. And if you want to sit out the season, you want to miss two seasons in a row, essentially, because he played, what, 9 games last year and collected $20 million. If I'm the Spurs, I'm saying, hey, cool, sit out again.
I like that ratio.
I want to work nine days out of the year and get $20 million.
Yep.
Yeah, I would work 365 days out of the year for that, to be honest.
He has done some right. He's pulled some right strings, Kawhi.
He sure has. You know what? I take everything back. I'm completely wrong on this. Quick, we got to go.
Yep, I made a mistake on the Yachty stat, so I want to correct that. Yep, Statman Brad made a mistake.
So your stat of the day was incorrect.
Well, yeah.
What if we would have given you the stat?
You know what? I would have given it right back in this moment. Okay, so basically,
you didn't earn it. Don't worry.
No, I didn't. But so he now owns the MLB record for the most games caught for one team.
Now, that's so much different.
Yeah, so, way different.
That was my bad. I read it wrong.
Stepman Brad, the irony.
I'll admit it.
The irony. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us here at Talking About Practice. I want to thank the guys. I want to thank our guest today. Will came in. We also had Aaron, our LA correspondent. I want to thank them. And most importantly, once again, thank you for spending part of your evening with us here at Talking About Practice here on FM 90.1 KZFR. Chico, we are listener-supported community radio. Stay tuned for the show and all the amazing programming right here on FM 90.1 KZFR.
Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice. Genesis 1:26-28, and God gave man dominion. Human activities, including hunting and hiking, they're nice, are driving mammals around the world to be, mammals around the world to be more active at night, because they're less likely to run into people then, except for the night people. This is according to a new study in Nature, the magazine. The consequences of this shift are still unclear. Scientists suspect it could threaten the survival of several animal populations. Researchers analyzed 76 published studies that monitored the activity of 62 mammal species, including some that are mostly nocturnal by nature, on six continents. Nothing on Antarctica. They compared the nighttime activity of each species during periods of time and in regions with high human disturbance during hunting season or in areas rife with roads with their nighttime activity during periods of time or in regions with low human disturbance. Most mammals become on average 20% more active at night in response to higher levels of human disturbance. Oh, this is actually published in Science, but it's reported in Nature.com. Okay, then, you guys fight it out. Animals such as coyotes, which typically split their activity evenly between day and night, conduct nearly 70% of their activity at night in hiking areas near California's Santa Cruz Mountains. Some cases are more extreme, cites the lead author. Sable antelopes, which are mostly up and about during the day, shift about 50% of their activities to night hours in Hwange National Park in Zimbabwe. There have been isolated studies that looked at animal activity in the presence of people. This is the first large-scale survey that quantifies how mammals shift their activity patterns in time. The next step, according to Marley Tucker, who studies broad ecological patterns at Senckenberg Biodiversity Research Center in Frankfurt, the next step is to understand the consequences of this time shift for the animals' reproduction and foraging. You know, the eating and the thing. The finding confirms previous assumptions that animals tend to avoid people, probably because they perceive us as a threat, says Chris Daramo, a conservation scientist at the University of Victoria in Canada. The study also produced some surprising results, he adds. One of them, in non-lethal activities, including hiking and agriculture, elicit the same responses from mammals as lethal activities, such as hunting. It doesn't matter whether we're having a picnic in the park or cutting down trees. The wildlife around us perceive us as a risk to their survival. That is so nutty. What is wrong with that wildlife? What are they... Although being more active at night might help mammals to reduce lethal encounters with people, it could have detrimental effects, says a conservation biologist. At a university in the Netherlands, many carnivores hunt by sight, so they're most successful during the day when they can see well. If the animals have to shift their activities to night hours, they might be less successful. Because of the potentially negative impacts of a more nocturnal lifestyle, it might be helpful for people to restrict certain recreational activities to specific hours of the day, says one of the scientists involved. Similar strategies already limit activities during certain times of the year. Rock climbing routes in New York's Adirondacks are closed during the peregrine falcon breeding season. The researcher says it's important people bear in mind how human activities might sway animal behavior. Quote, just because we don't see wildlife on a daily basis, it doesn't mean it's not out there. Right now, it might not. More about Dominion. Because we got it, and we're flaunting it. To date, most evidence of insect decline in Canada has been anecdotal, people simply noticing fewer bugs. Other relevant research is based on the subsequent decline in birds that depend on insects for food. But now, Neville Winchester, an adjunct assistant professor at the University of Victoria, is launching an insect inventory study this summer, first of its kind in British Columbia, important to understanding insect declines. Insects have inventories?
They better get rid of it. They better have a big sale. Winchester says he has noticed declines in bees and butterflies, even on pristine properties. How do we quantify that? That's what we're trying to do with this project. Much like the German study reported on earlier, it's like 75% decrease in some insect populations. You know, we keep hearing, every once in a while at least, that humans are going to have to turn to insects for food. Too late. Agricultural activity by humans more than 2,000 years ago had a more significant and lasting impact on the environment than previously thought. This finding was discovered by a team of international researchers led by the University of British Columbia. There's that Canada again. It's reported in Science Advances. The researchers found an increase in deforestation and agricultural activity during the Bronze Age. Now that was an age. In Ireland, they got bronze in Ireland? Reached a tipping point that affected Earth's nitrogen cycle, the process that keeps nitrogen, that's a critical element necessary for, you know, life, circulating between the atmosphere, land, and oceans. Scientists are increasingly recognizing that humans have always impacted their ecosystems. But finding early evidence of significant and lasting change is rare, says the study's lead author. They performed isotope analyses on 712 animal bones collected from at least 90 archaeological sites in Ireland. They find significant changes in the nitrogen composition of soil nutrients and plants that made up the animal's diet during the Bronze Age. Supposedly, according to the researchers, this is because of an increase in the scale and intensity of deforestation, agriculture, and pastoral farming. While these results are specific to Ireland, during the Bronze Age, the researcher says the findings have global implications. Yeah. It's called Dominion. Hello, welcome to the show.
Precedent. So I took a personality pill.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to Santa Monica and this week's edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Let's bring it in, shall we? The government of Germany has until the end of the month to come up with a plan to deal with the aftermath of a notorious German-led cult in Chile. That's according to Deutsche Welle, German news organization. Activists fear the government won't meet the deadline. But who meets deadlines? Colonia Dignidad is a 53-square-mile settlement about 240 miles south of Santiago in Chile, founded by Germany's Paul Schaefer. And was the site of hundreds of atrocities, including child abuse. The German government is, by the way, Colonia Dignidad, for those of you who don't speak the language, means the dignity colony. There's your oxymoron. The German government has pledged to establish a memorial and help survivors and family members of victims, but until recently, not many people in Germany wanted to know the dark story of what happened at Colonia Dignidad. Schaefer, who had run a children's home in Germany, fled following accounts of pederasty and sadism. He founded the colony in 1961 with 200 followers. His mission, he claimed, was to establish a site of, quote, original Christian life in the promised land, unquote, believing that Germany was about to be invaded and destroyed by the Soviet Union. A number of kidnapped children were taken to the colony where they were sexually abused and subjected to forced labor. Schaefer and the other settlement leaders established contact with right-wing extremist Chilean groups. And after the putsch by the Chilean military in 1973, abetted by the United States, hello, Dr. Kissinger, how are you doing? Pinochet used the remote location as a site to torture and kill enemies of his regime. In 1991, the Chilean government revoked the colony's status as a charitable organization. Just about time. And in 1997, two young people succeeded in fleeing the settlement for Germany, where they told their stories. But government officials, including the German ambassador to Chile, ignored the tales of horror. Schaefer disappeared in 1997 to avoid facing charges of sexual abuse, tried in absentia, found guilty in 2004, arrested in 2005. He died in 2010. The colony was put under the administration of the state to ensure it would pay its $1.5 million court-ordered compensation to victims. But 140 members of the cult still live there, and a Bavarian-themed hotel operates within the settlement, where hundreds of people were abused and murdered. Tourism's a nutty thing, isn't it? In an admission that Germany, too, bears responsibility for the crimes committed at the colony, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, then the foreign minister, opened government records going back over 20 years on Colonia Dignidad to the public a couple years ago. Last June, members of all the parties in the German parliament passed a resolution giving the government a year to come up with plans to investigate the history of the colony, establish a memorial, and offer assistance to victims and family members. The initiative has a support across the political spectrum into Bundestag. It's my favorite Stag. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I kind of copyrighted it. And now, back to our own trivial problems. The makers of the world's first smart fingerprint padlock have made one critical error. They forgot about the existence of screwdrivers. Taplock, this is according to the Register, British Tech Journal, raised $320,000 a couple years ago for their product that would allow you to use just your finger to open the unbreakable lock. Things took a turn for the worse when the shipping date of September came and went. Backers complained the company has stopped posting any updates, wasn't responding to emails or social media posts. But after months of silence, the company assured the Register everything was still moving forward. The delays were due to manufacturing issues in China. The $100 Taplock, finally, after 18 months, is on the market. And it's reportedly, according to the Register, somewhat flawed. No less than three major problems have been discovered. The Taplock used zinc aluminum alloy Zamac 3, something that they claim lends the lock unbreakable durability. Aluminum does provide an enviable degree of detail when die-cast, but it's not exactly the best choice for something supposed to be unbreakable. It isn't very strong. It melts at high temperatures, and it is quite brittle. That's not one of the three flaws. The first major flaw was the way it used Bluetooth to lock and unlock. A security expert reviewed the lock, and it took him less than an hour to find a way of opening every single tap lock, because the lock broadcasts its own Bluetooth address unencrypted. This level of security is completely unacceptable, he said. The expert informed the company about it, gave it 7 days before he went public with the flaw. Just hours before the deadline was up, TapLock put out a security notice warning everyone needed to upgrade their lock's firmware to get the latest protection. The second flaw, another security researcher published a blog post pointing out that if you create a TapLock account and gain a login, as if you were able to log in, you'll be able to open every single TapLock out there. One of the researchers noted in his piece, he saw all kinds of red flags that made him confident the lock's security was going to be terrible. The second expert said the same thing, but with different red flags. He approached the lock from the angle of the app and was immediately concerned that it didn't even use HTTPS, the basic security thing for internet-connected stuff. He dug around, found it was trivial to access other users' account privileges from a different account. That security flaw enabled him not only to get at the lock, but to access the actual account information. Turns out TapLock actually hands out all the information people need not only to access others' locks, but where you can find them physically. Those are software errors. What about the physical error itself? Aside from the aluminum alloy and the lack of a physical step in the lock itself that all decent lock manufacturers add to prevent thieves from shimming it open. Didn't know about that. The flaw is that you can unscrew the back off, where you can find standard Phillips head screws that you could remove using a screwdriver. Once inside, it's trivial to pop the lock. Including, it's possible to access any tap lock in under 30 seconds using nothing more than a mount and a screwdriver. Companies serious about security, which might include lock manufacturers, would usually use custom screws requiring custom screwdrivers. Yeah, but Register also reports that tap lock's marketing having been so effective, there's already a tap lock knockoff that's even less secure. There's a screw on the outside of the lock that allows you to access its guts. When another lock testing user made the company, this is another company, the knockoff company, aware of this, here was the response. Quote, we designed this fingerprint lock of againsting theft. However, the lock is invincible to the people who do not have a screwdriver. Unquote. That's smart. Gotta hand it to him. That is smart. But now, time for news of the Olympic movement. Produced by the always smart Jim Ebersole Jr. And must smart. Well, it's spreading. First in Switzerland, Swiss voters killed off their country's chances of hosting the 2026 Winter Olympics last week after refusing to approve financial support for the Olympics. Some 54% of voters in the southern canton of Valais, not the San Fernando Valley, I hope, rejected granting $101.5 million towards the event. The decision spells the end of the Swiss bid to host the Games, which were to be centered on the city of Sion, after the campaign threw in the towel. This is the end of the project to bring the Winter Olympics to Sion in 2026, said the campaign spokesman. We couldn't convince a majority of voters that this was a reasonable and sustainable project. In the end, it's all about the money. Now, he tells us. And people were concerned it would become too expensive, unquote. Residents of a number of towns and cities, as you know, have in recent years balked at the cost and disruption associated with hosting the Olympics. Switzerland's exit leaves Graz in Austria, Stockholm in Sweden, Turkey's Erzurum, Japan's Sapporo again, and an Italian bid involving Cortina, Milan, and Turin, as well as Canada, which might bid if they can get the people in and around Calgary to agree. Under Switzerland's serious system of direct democracy, imagine that, voters in Valais were asked to approve of the funding to be used for security and to be building permanent sporting infrastructure. You know how well that works out. The government had supported the bid, saying hosting the games would boost the region's profile. Final budget of the games would be about 2.4 billion Swiss francs. They still have those, with the Swiss government contributing almost 1 billion. Opponents had raised fears the games would go over budget. Nah. And the money would be better spent on roads, hospitals, and social services. Nah. Here's the ironic part. The International Olympic Committee is based in Switzerland. It said it was disappointed in the result. But they're not thinking about moving. Because of the tax? No, I don't know why. Gold Coast ratepayers in Australia will not be footing the bill to host an Olympic Games in southeast Queensland. There had been talk of putting in a joint bid for the 2032 Games, but the Gold Coast City Council has drawn a line in the sand, refusing to contribute financially. It's according to TripleM.com. The city paid $190 million to host the Commonwealth Games a couple months ago. The council has decided it will not be contributing to another major international sporting event anytime soon. We're at the level where we can host an event like the Olympics, he said, thanks to upgraded stadiums and facilities. But he was concerned the cost of the games will soar out of control. Where would he get that idea? Security costs alone, he said, are going to be quite a lot of money. My caution is to the state government, this would be Queensland, to look at their budget, because when London put their games together, it cost, in U.S. dollars, $29.2 billion. First time we've heard that figure. Had to come from down under. That's how it goes when you're the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Here's good news on the microplastics front. McDonald's, you've heard of them, is ditching plastic straws in all of its UK and Ireland restaurants, some 1,300 of them, in what could turn out to be a playbook for its operations in the rest of the world, or just a happy accident. The company says paper straws, which are more environmentally friendly, will replace plastic ones starting in September. McDonald's uses 1.8 million straws a day in the UK, according to the BBC. They should know. Reflecting the broader public debate, our customers told us they wanted to see a move on straws, said the chief executive of McDonald's UK and Ireland. The new straws will use paper from sustainable sources, like plastic. No. UK's environmental secretary called it a significant contribution to help the environment. The ban on plastic straws comes as a result of a series of successful trials, which are set to spread to the U.S., France, and Norway. The U.S. uses 500 million plastic straws every day, according to a recycling nonprofit organization. Plastic straws are technically recyclable, but their small size and weight mean they are often missed by sorting machines, and the sheer number of straws used every day means they make a big contribution to the millions of tons of plastic that end up in the ocean every year, down the gullets of our fishy friends. But it's not all good news in the environment. No. That's why there's news of the warm, won't you? Right this way.
Soft, listen to the warm.
If I could write this way, I wouldn't have to read this stuff. The world is on track to exceed 1.5 centigrade of what degrees of warming unless countries rapidly implement far-reaching actions to reduce carbon emissions. This is according to a draft UN report leaked to Reuters. The final draft report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is due for publication in October. That's the guiding scientific document for what countries must do to combat climate change. This is the draft version of that final report. Human-induced warming would exceed 1.5 degrees centigrade Celsius, sorry, by about 2040 if emissions continue at their present rate, according to the report. Countries could keep warming below that level if they made, quote, rapid and far-reaching changes, unquote. Climate scientist and climate analytics director Bill Hare says the draft report shows with greater clarity how much faster countries need to move towards decarbonization under various temperature situations, and that the impacts of climate change greatly increase above 1.5 degrees centigrade and between that and 2 degrees centigrade of warming. Necessary actions include making the transition to renewable energy, powering the transport sector with zero carbon electricity, improving agricultural management, and stopping deforestation. That's all. If emissions continue on their present pathway, there's no chance of limiting global temperature rises even to 3 degrees centigrade. Economic modeling in the draft report shows that the dangers for economic growth, particularly in developing countries, are significantly greater at 2 degrees than at 1.5. So even on an economic basis, the recommendation is humans should do this. But we're humans. And many coral reefs will be unable to keep growing fast enough to keep up with rising sea levels. That will leave tropical coastlines and low-lying islands exposed to increased erosion and flooding risk. This is suggested by new research reported by Eureka Alert. An international team led by scientists from the University of Exeter, Royal Netherlands Institute for Sea Research, Lancaster University, and the Australian Research Council's Centre of Excellence for Coral Reef Studies compared the maximum upward growth rates of coral reefs with predicted rates of sea level rise, finding that many reefs will be unable to keep pace. You would expect maybe the reefs would grow because the corals are living things, but the growth is strongly influenced by the amount and types of coral living on the reef surface. This growth is now being hampered by combinations of coral disease, deteriorating water quality, and fishing pressure, along with severe impacts from coral bleaching caused by climate change. I think we could help deal with that coral disease by allowing pharmaceutical advertising to corals, but that's just me. For many reefs across the Caribbean and Indian Ocean regions where the study focused, rates of growth are slowing due to coral reef degradation, said the lead author. Meanwhile, rates of sea level rise are increasing. Our results suggest reefs will be unable to keep up. Now, this is, as noted at the beginning, of critical concern because reefs play a key role as natural sea defenses by limiting coastal wave energy exposure, says another co-author of the study. If only we could assign a dollar value to the protective services that corals provide, we might even care. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And that brings us to this week's activities on the part of the President of the United States. Of course, he came back from that meeting with Kim Jong-il in Singapore, the summit, with a document that most observers said was not that much different from the documents that the North Koreans have signed previously with other American administrations, only to disregard those provisions later on. No real provision for enforcement or inspection detailed in the document signed in Singapore. But, you know, they were in a hurry. The president left Singapore singing the praises of Kim Jong-il, saying he was tough, you know,